Hello, I'm Tony Hines and you're listening to the Chain Reaction Podcast, all about supply chain advantage. Well, glad you could drop by today. Got a great episode coming up, so stay tuned. Now, when it comes to regulators, what's the point of having a regulator who doesn't really regulate? The whole purpose of having regulation in a particular area, such as energy, is to ensure that the energy companies don't abuse their monopoly positions to charge what they want to. And if you have a regulator that simply sets limits, which all the companies decide to simply charge up to, that's no regulation at all. And yet that's what we've got with Ofgem in the United Kingdom. It's a failed organisation, really. And it's about time that government woke up to the fact that something needs to be done about the way this regulatory framework works. They have to realise that consumers need to be confident that the regulatory system is working in their favour and not against them. And the charges for energy costs just seem to go up and up. Now, we know that the market price of energy is volatile. And one of the reasons it is volatile is because we don't have enough storage for things like liquefied natural gas, LNG. And that's because no action has been taken to increase storage capacity. And what little storage we did have has been severely reduced. Another major problem with the regulatory framework is that when LNG prices increase, the price of electricity also increases because it's tied to gas prices, which seems a complete nonsense. And then we have the problem of the fixed charge. And fixed charges occur whether you use any energy or not. And that's just wrong. So it's about time that the regulator was investigated itself to ensure that it's working to make market adjustments when energy prices are volatile in favour of consumers, not in favour of suppliers, which seems to be the case at present. Ofgem stands for the Office of Gas and Electricity Markets, and it's the UK's energy regulator. The National Audit Office, Citizens Advice, and the Business Energy Select Committee criticised Ofgem for not providing adequate oversight of new entrants and the scrutiny of their financial resilience, which they say led to the collapse of dozens of energy suppliers, which has cost consumers around about £2.7 billion, as the negative balances of those failed energy companies was recouped through charging consumers more. In addition, Ofgem has been criticised for not regulating the market as it should do. This month, Tim Jarvis, who's Ofgem's Director for Markets, said it was now the right time to revisit the contentious issue of high standing charges. The Ofgem price cap is going up again. It'll rise to £1,928 a year for a typical annual energy bill in the United Kingdom when it's adjusted in January. And soaring energy prices are likely again, after dropping back briefly to £1,834 in October, it's rising by £94 in January as wholesale gas and electricity prices have risen. So, once again, in the winter months, this always happens in winter in the past couple of years, people in the United Kingdom will pay a lot more for their energy. So whatever happened to competition in this market? Well, there just isn't any. It's a completely fixed market. It's a fallacy to think there's any competition in the market. The price cap that Ofgem has set for households in England, Wales and Scotland goes up by 5% for an average annual dual-fuel energy bill from January 2024. The cap's updated every 3 months, and only in one of those periods does it seem to have fallen slightly back in October. And the cap doesn't really mean anything because it's not the maximum figure that households pay. It merely limits how much a supplier can charge for each unit of energy, as well as the maximum daily standing charge, a flat fee, charged for gas and electricity connections to the grid, regardless of use. So bills could well be higher for many. And one of the big things this week with the Chancellor's autumn statement announcements was that inflation was falling. Well, one of the big reasons it did fall was because energy costs went down in October. So it has fallen since those energy costs went down. But now they're going up again. Rather than turning the corner, we're turning right back into higher inflation. So come January, inflation will be up again. The average daily standing charge for energy is 53.37 pence for electricity and 29.62 pence for gas. In January, that will go slightly down to 53.35 for electricity and 29.6p for gas. So if you've got electricity and gas, which most people have in their homes, it's 83 pence a day. And standing charges do vary by region. So for example, people in Merseyside and North Wales pay substantially more than those in the southeast of England. So how can that be? Well, it's very odd, isn't it? This is not a market. This is a conspiracy. And of course, it's even worse for business. Business have the uncertainty of not knowing what their energy bills are going to be. And of course, once businesses are paying higher energy bills, that means everyone's paying more for everything they buy from those businesses, because they can't simply absorb the cost of energy. They have to pass it on through higher prices. So again, it's inflationary. So if you really want to tackle inflation, you've got to do something about the energy market and the way it works. It needs to work as a market rather than the way it does at present, which is basically a supplier's charter to simply charge what they like. It was reported in the Metro this week that polling, which was conducted prior to the autumn statement for the Warm This Winter campaign, found that well over a third of the public, 37%, blamed the energy bill crisis on government policy. Hardly any respondents, just 3%, said the government policy bore no responsibility for high energy bills. Simon Francis, who's coordinator of the End Fuel Poverty Coalition, said that the price hikes come at the worst possible time for households. Bills go up just as winter bites. And of course, it's a bit like a Bob Cratchit moment, isn't it really, in Christmas Carol. He said they warned Ofgem in January that the price cap rise was a bad idea when the regulator consulted on it in 2022. And now we have the effect of these changes being realised. So it's a flawed policy, is the suggestion. And given the evidence, one has to agree. Now, it may or may not have gone unnoticed this week that there were two very important elections that could take geopolitics to a new level in both the Netherlands and Argentina. They've elected new leaders, and both of them come from the far right. They are populist with policies, telling people what they want to hear, rather than necessarily having any substance to those policies. They seem to speak in slogans. Now, is this the way the future's heading? And there are concerns that this could be a redrawing of the political landscape in Europe, that the Netherlands might just be the first domino in the row. Well, how will that impact supply chains in future? Will it make them more volatile than they already are? Or will it stabilise things? Well, we'll have to wait and see how things progress. But it's an interesting change, and you need to know that those matters are changing around you. As you work to carry out your business. The Dutch far-right populist Geert Wilders, dubbed the Dutch Donald Trump, won a landslide victory in parliamentary elections. He's been labelled the anti-Islam politician, and he's vowed to stop all immigration to the Netherlands, and if elected to the post of Prime Minister, he would become the country's first far-right Prime Minister. His Freedom Party won 37 seats out of the 150. Available. The second largest party is the joint Labour Green ticket, 25 seats, and 24 for the Conservative People's Party for Freedom and Democracy, which is the party of the outgoing Prime Minister, Mark Rutte. And Wilders does speak like Trump. He talks about the Dutch will be number one again. So a bit like making America great again with Donald Trump. Many are concerned with the way things in Europe are going because they already see Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban, with his approach to harsh tactics for migration, and he was the first to congratulate Mr. Wilders. Viktor Orban said the winds of change are here. Congratulations. Many are concerned across Europe that the political landscape is shifting from Slovakia and Spain to Germany and Poland. We have populist hard-right parties gaining traction. Now, in the past year or so, most of the talk in development in tech industries has been about AI and the rise of artificial intelligence. But it was interesting this week to read about NASA's X-59 supersonic plane. It's been dubbed the Son of Concorde, and it will apparently take passengers from New York to London in just 90 minutes. NASA's X-59 quiet supersonic passenger plane will fly faster than the speed of sound. It'll be almost twice as fast as Concorde, but it's much quieter, so won't have the same kind of noise pollution. That really drove Concorde out of the market. It flies at around 925 miles per hour on average, and NASA say they've identified around 50 routes between cities where there's a market for this type of transport. They've had to develop special paint, not just to make it look better, but it protects the aircraft from moisture and corrosion. The plane has the capacity, of course, to travel between Mach 2, which is 1,535 miles an hour, to Mach 4, which is 3,045 miles per hour at sea level. Today's large airliners cruise at roughly 600 miles an hour, or about 80% of the speed of sound. Concorde, you may remember, had a maximum cruising speed of 1,354 miles an hour before it was taken out of service, and that's about Mach 2.04. Now, some very strange things have been going on at OpenAI. Sam Altman was fired this time last week, but this week he seems to be back as the CEO once again. So fired by the board on Friday, reappointed by the board after less than a week, and during the interim period between being fired and reappointed by the board, he was, of course, given a job at Microsoft to lead their AI developments. So what's going on at OpenAI? Seems some very strange things. Perhaps we need to ask ChatGPT for a summary of this. So I did just that, and this is what ChatGPT told me. According to recent news reports, Sam Altman, the CEO and co-founder of OpenAI, was fired from his position on Friday, November the 18th, 2023, after the board accused him of not being consistently candid in his communications. The news of his dismissal has been a major shake-up in Silicon Valley. However, the situation has since evolved. A few days after his firing, Altman was reinstated as CEO of OpenAI following a near mutiny at the company. That's of people, not robots. The exact reason for his reinstatement are unclear, but it appears that the decision was influenced by the fact that Altman had discovered a new breakthrough, AGI, that could think like humans. Some staff believe that this AGI would destroy humanity, and Altman was reportedly fired to stop him from releasing it. How bizarre. AGI, by the way, is artificial general intelligence. It's a theoretical pursuit in the field of artificial intelligence, working to develop AI with human-level cognition. AGI is considered strong AI compared to weak AI, which can function only with a specific set of parameters. AGI can learn to accomplish any intellectual task that human beings or animals can perform. It's referred to as full AI, human-level AI. And this is what companies such as OpenAI, DeepMind, and Anthropic are working towards. But of course, it's something that is cause for concern for many. And the debate is also raging as to whether large language models such as GPT-3 are early incomplete forms of AGI. AGI, of course, could disrupt the economy, and some say even threaten humanity. There was an announcement by Nissan this week that it expects to invest more money in establishing its future electric models at the Sunderland plant in the United Kingdom. The Quashqai and the Juke models are part of a £1 billion investment backed by government funding through the Automotive Transformation Fund. Turkey raised interest rates this week by 5% to 40% as the country is battling with inflation. It's the sixth time in a row that policymakers have increased the interest rate, to try and bring inflation down from over 60%. The central bank said they hoped that the rate rises would come to an end soon. So if we think we've got problems in Europe and the United States with inflation, Turkey seemed to have mega problems. Now, another thing in the news this week was the investigation into the collapse of the Wilko store in the United Kingdom. You'll recall that I talked about this in previous episodes of the Chain Reaction podcast when Wilko collapsed in August with the loss of 400 stores and 12,000 jobs. There is still some concern that the United Kingdom may face a recession in 2024. Service companies have seen work increase for the first time in 3 months, but a survey in the UK found that businesses think a recession is still possible. The International Energy Agency has said that the real problem with the oil and gas market is that there needs to be more innovation and a move towards clean energy. Fossil fuel companies need to make a pivot from fossil fuels to renewables. And there was more news out this week that global warming is increasing at a faster rate than expected. So plenty of motivation for energy companies to put the innovative hat on and work towards developing the S-curve that can switch from current fossil fuels to renewable energies at a faster rate. Now, one of the things that really upsets supply chains is spikes. And by spikes, I mean spikes to costs. And this can happen in a variety of ways. You could take two simple periods of time, period one, period two. And in period one, you could have things like raw materials, labor cost, and energy costs all stable. And in period two, a rise in the energy cost will cause probably an increase in the price of raw materials also. And it will probably also increase labor costs as people pay more to get to and from work, or they want more higher wages to pay for their own electricity and gas in a domestic setting. So you can see how these things can very quickly spike the cost inside organisations. And that's what's been happening with energy costs. Until energy costs are under control, those spikes will remain. And I don't really know what it is that politicians find so hard about the concept of cost in relation to energy. But if you control energy cost, inflation will come down, and so too will the price of goods and services. Well, there's a limit, isn't there, to how many big TV screens or Alexas and other devices that you can have at any one time. And this is what's called saturation. So are we reaching saturation point? Well, the preliminary Black Friday results might suggest that we are. Consumers appear less willing to part with their hard-earned cash to splash out on Black Friday deals. Now, it may be saturation, but it may also be the fact that they're waking up and thinking, these deals aren't so good. And people are telling them that those deals aren't so good. All kinds of consumer associations are making statements that suggest that many of the goods that are offered in Black Friday deals have sold at lower prices at different times during the year. And so this realization is also cooling down the impact of Black Friday. A record 130.7 million people were expected to shop in stores and online in the United States on Black Friday, according to the National Retail Federation. But at 6 a.m. on Friday, at a Walmart in New Milford, Connecticut, the parking lot was only half full, according to Reuters. So it's a lot quieter this year. In Paramus, New Jersey, crowds at the Garden State Plaza were also thinner than in prior years. So people aren't clamoring to get through the doors to get those Black Friday deals. U.S. shoppers plan to spend an average of $875 on holiday purchases, $42 more than last year, with clothing, gift cards and toys top of the list. People are buying, of course, now for the Christmas period. And this Black Friday tradition that started in the United States has gone global and it's moved online. But the rise of online shopping, of course, has reduced the importance of Black Friday, because you know you can get your goods now 24/7, 365. And that means that one particular sale day is not necessarily going to do the trick when it comes to selling more goods. About 16% of retail sales in the United States get returned to where they bought them from. But there's also been an increase in fraudulent returns or returns of stolen goods, and not just those returns of legitimately bought goods. And when retailers need to get rid of stock, they can't always wait for Black Friday. Black Friday is just another opportunity to discount, but they might have to discount sooner if they've overstocked. So if they've got too much inventory, they're going to have other sale days where they're going to push out those goods. But of course, some of the deals aren't as good as they actually appear. And in the past, of course, many stores would give really deep discounts to get rid of those inventories. Whereas now some of the discounts being given online or in stores around Black Friday are not what they claim to be. The discounts aren't particularly high in some cases. Goods have sold at higher prices at different times of the year. And of course, people are becoming more savvy to the tricks of the retail trade because they see them every day, not just in stores, but of course online. And so as consumers become more aware of the tricks, they will step up with their own tricks, delaying purchases and of course trying to get those deals at different times of the year. And people track goods. They have a look and see where they can get those goods and how the prices are changing over time. So, will Black Friday continue? Probably will. These things, once they hit tradition, tend to stay in place. But will they be as effective? Well, we'll have to look at the results when they come out next week sometime. Now, I contacted the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport this week, and that was in a search to find out where a conference was held about 40 years ago by the British Production, Inventory and Control Society, because I was trying to track down a reference location for a publication I was citing in the new edition of my book. And I've told you about my book previously. It comes out in February 2024, and I'm just doing the final proofs at the moment for that book, and I wanted some detail for one of the references I had in a chapter. So I contacted the CILT, C-I-L-T, and spoke to a lady, Jo, who put me in touch with the Knowledge Hub, where I spoke to Jean. And Jean tracked down the impossible, and she sent me a mail giving me all the details I required. And of course, CILT were the authority on this one. But I'd searched all over the internet for this particular reference to a paper at a conference that I'd read many years ago, which had something interesting to say. And they were able to help me out. So thanks to Joe, and thanks to Jean at the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport. Great teamwork. So thank you. Well, that's it for this week. That's the news roundup, some big news stories, and I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and I hope you've learned something by listening. I'll see you next week in the new midweek edition of the Chain Reaction Podcast. So until then, I'm Tony Hines. I'm signing off. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Chain Reaction Podcast, written, presented and produced by Tony Hines.
I'm here to tell you about the Chain Reaction Podcast, all about supply chain advantage. I've been researching and writing about supply chains for over 25 years. I wrote my first book on supply chain strategies in the early 2000s. Each week we have special episodes on particular topics relating to supply chains, and we have a weekly news roundup every Saturday at 12 noon, all things impacting global supply chains in that week. So come and join us on the Chain Reaction Podcast. I look forward to seeing you there. I'm Tony Hines. I'm signing off. Bye for now.